Hello, I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Abortion advocates on the streets. And on the world stage.
We cannot have equality without the right to abortion.
Pushing publicly to enshrine what they call a human right to end unborn life.
Anti-American sentiment is at an all-time high in many of these countries. Traditional partners with the United States, without exception, they say it's because of the ideology. And to quote, you are pushing and shoving this down our throats.
And behind closed doors. But the work of the church is not stopping.
It's up to the church and other pro-life leaders to convince the minds and hearts of Americans that, in fact, every life has dignity and has worth.
From local communities to the Vatican to promote a culture of life.
The church is reaffirming the need to defend the dignity of life upon which all other rights and values are based.
Church teaching on the sanctity of life at all stages, reiterated in the latest document by the Vatican's Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith. Dignitas Infinita writes of the grave violations of human dignity, including war, poverty, human trafficking, euthanasia, surrogacy, and abortion. Specifically calling out abortion, writing that acceptance of it is a telling sign of an extremely dangerous crisis of the moral sense, which is becoming more and more incapable of distinguishing between good and evil. The Vatican is clear and consistent on calling out the evils of abortion through documents like Dignitas Infinita, by church leaders throughout the world, and of course, by the Holy Father himself. Despite the call to honor life, we're seeing the expansion to access to abortion, even in regions and countries with strong Catholic roots. Just this March, lawmakers in France approved an amendment explicitly enshrining abortion into the country's constitution. It is the first country in the world to do so. Abortion is widely supported across France. The abortion amendment passed in a 780-72 vote in the Palace of Versailles. And in April, the European Union Parliament voted on a resolution to add abortion and include abortion in the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights.
We need access to medical abortion across borders, and I ask for the right for the abortion to be inscribed in the Charter of Fundamental Rights.
Of course we need abortion. Abortion gives women the power to choose their own lives.
The resolution criticized the doctors' rights of conscience and specifically called out Poland and Malta for their pro-life laws. While the resolution passed, it is non-binding. The EU is not the only international body that supports and pushes abortion on a global scale. So-called experts with the United Nations have called pro-life laws in the United States a violation of human rights. The UN Human Rights Committee called on the U.S. government to bring its laws in line with the World Health Organization's 2022 abortion care guidelines. Those guidelines call for abortion to be available on request, with no limits on gestation, without any waiting periods, and without the need for recommendations or parental consent. The UN and World Health Organization, along with several other entities, began the Human Reproductive Program, part of which features videos promoting abortion as a right and guiding healthcare workers around the world to walk clients through the abortion process. Asia is home to two of the most populated countries in the world, China and India. Abortion is broadly legal in those two countries, but there are some Asian countries with life-protecting laws as well. In Laos, the Philippines, and Iran, it is illegal. In Afghanistan, Pakistan, Myanmar, Malaysia, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, South Korea, and Bhutan, abortion is allowed in cases to save a woman's life. Some of those countries have exceptions for rape, incest, or the physical and mental health of the mother. The rest of Asia, however, is very liberal about abortion. In China, it's widely acceptable. Legalized in 1953, China has one of the highest rates of abortion in the world, at 49 abortions for every 1,000 reproductive-aged women, according to the Guttenmacher Institute, and accessible by the nation's family planning program. Japan decriminalized abortion in 1948, and Singapore officially decriminalized it in 1974. Despite Singapore being a country that widely accepts abortion, it also has a strong pro-family government. EWTN News Vice President Dr. Matthew Bunsen sat down with Cardinal William Goh, the Archbishop of Singapore, to talk about the work to encourage family life.
We are trying to protect the family. So we have many, I think we have 11 organizations that deal with family life. Yeah, so we have to work hard at it. I won't say that we are doing extremely well, but because we belong to this Asian culture, that family dimension is always important, but we need to protect it because I think with affluence, that family is being threatened, and because parents are all working and the children, we have small families, and in fact, we are below replacement of the population as well. So, and then the younger people, they are not interested in having families, means commitments, children, their job, their career, their own social time, all taken away. So we are promoting. And the beautiful part is this, the government is working with us all.
Right.
We have a ministry, we call it the Ministry of Social and Family. And this ministry, they try to promote family life. And the programs that they have are very good programs. So we complement each other. And so so we are grateful that the government also sees the importance of growing the family, strengthening our family, and healing people who are divorced and those from dysfunctional family.
In India, sex-selective abortion is culturally accepted. Rebecca Shaw, co-director of the University of Dallas's Program for Indo-American Friendship and Understanding, explains the broad legality of this practice.
One of the most interesting things about India is that India is the most populous nation in the world. We have overtaken China. We have 1.4 billion people, and when many people think about India, they just think of lots and lots and lots of people. They don't really think about the serious issue, which is population decline in India at the moment. For the first time in India, the total fertility rate has dipped below replacement level of 2.1. We are now at 2. So India's population is slowly declining. We are a young population, so there's population momentum. Now, how does this have an impact on abortion? Well, as you said, since 1971, we have had the Medical Termination of Pregnancy Act, ostensibly enacted to provide safe abortions. But what is safe abortions? Abortion, in my non-medical view, is a murder and quite unsafe. But this was an act that began in 1971 and was amended in 2021. There are various criteria for abortion in India, and most of those criteria are quite broad. One is, of course, to save a woman's life. We've heard this. The other is for the mental and physical well-being of a woman. Economic and social necessity. And finally, abortion is allowed if contraception between a husband and wife has failed. So quite broad. There were in 2015 about 17 million abortions. A majority of those, 73% of those abortions were conducted outside of healthcare facilities. This, of course, led to the amendment of this Medical Termination of Pregnancy Act of 1971. It was amended in 2021 to include the provision of abortions for non-married women or unmarried single women. At around the time the MTP Act was enacted in 1971. We have the introduction of ultrasound machines in 1971 as well. Of course, they set the ultrasound machines up to detect fetal abnormalities.
Right.
But the effect of which was to result in significant sex-selective abortions, where there was tremendous female feticide. We have millions and millions of missing girls. In 1980, that is 10 years after ultrasound machines were introduced in India, we have a sex ratio of 111 boys to 100 girls. So that is 111 boys. This is just an average number. There are districts in India with about 69 girls to 100 boys. So we have a bare branches issue, very similar to the one you might have heard of in China. Having said that, sex selective abortion has improved in India. I want to raise this as a positive. It's come down from 111 boys to 100 girls to 108. A small decrease, but overall, in terms of absolute numbers, that's a good change. Yeah. And the one wonderful thing, which I'm proud of to say as an Indian Christian, is that Indian Christians have consistently had a sex ratio of 104 of 103 boys to girls, which is close to the norm.
Yes.
So while other religious traditions in India have had very disastrous sex ratios, we as Christians have had maintained good sex ratios in India. Now, in terms of the value of life, so in Hinduism and in Islam, but let me talk first about Hinduism, there is a strong belief in the value of life, dharma, which is the law of nature, which we could say is similar to what we Catholics would call natural law, believes in the value of life. And it is a sin to kill life within you. In fact, there's a wonderful, I want to tell you about a Hindu tradition where a woman who's 7 months pregnant gets to wear red and green bangles. And it's a special tradition because the bangles are supposed to, when the mother walks, the child within her is to hear the music of those bangles, glass bangles. So there's a commitment to life in these religious traditions, and there's strong prescriptions against abortion also in Islam. And we see that in the sex ratio of Muslims in India, who also show positive sex ratios, i.e. 105 boys to 100 girls. So that's pretty standard and not as disastrous as some other religious traditions in India.
One of the most drastically changing landscapes for abortion is Latin America. In just the last 20 years, many Latin American countries like Mexico and Argentina have eased restrictions on abortion, often ignoring deeply held Catholic roots. But despite recent efforts to legalize abortion, pro-life advocates in these countries press on in the fight for the unborn.
Mexico City, the capital of one of the most Catholic countries in the world, and home of Our Lady of Guadalupe, became the first region in Mexico to legalize abortion in 2007. The new regulations shocked people both inside and outside the country, and other Mexican states refused to follow suit. Many states even added regulations that protected life from conception at the encouragement of the Catholic Church and pro-life movement. In 2021, Mexico's Supreme Court first struck down a pro-life law in Coahuila that criminalized abortion. Just 2 years later, the High Court threw out all federal criminal penalties, ruling national laws prohibiting the procedure were unconstitutional. The ruling requires federal health institutions to offer abortions, but access to the procedure remains restricted through most of Mexico. Currently, only 12 out of 32 Mexican states allow abortion. Despite these setbacks, pro-life advocates in Mexico march forward, inspired by the United States' historic overturning of decades-old abortion precedent at the U.S. Supreme Court. We will continue to lobby. Let's remember what happened in the United States. After 40 years, the Supreme Court reversed its abortion decision, and we're not going to stop until Mexico guarantees the right to life from the moment of conception. In Argentina, pro-life advocates also press forward, undeterred by their own country's pro-abortion legislation. In 2020, Argentina made headlines around the world after its Congress legalized abortion up to 12 weeks, the largest country in Latin America to allow the procedure. The Marea Verde, or Green Wave Movement, a grassroots coalition of pro-abortion protesters who wear green bandanas, helped make the push for more access to abortion. Their bandanas have become a badge for pro-abortion movements across Latin America and even here in the United States. Pro-life Argentines see a glimmer of hope in their new president, Javier Milei. Since taking the helm of Argentina in December 2023, the controversial leader has expressed a desire to roll back Argentina's law and even called abortion aggravated murder. Regardless of Milei's efforts, pro-life advocates in Argentina march on, confident that their country will someday protect the unborn.
We know the neighborhoods and people still value life, and even people with more economic problems are the ones who defend life the most.
ASI Prensa, which is owned by EWTN, covers pro-life and all Catholic news throughout Latin America. To follow local stories there, log on to aciprensa.com. Coming up, taking on the world to build a pro-life culture.
We want to listen. We want to hear what their needs are in terms of improving true health for women, protecting every life, supporting and strengthening their families.
We sit down with a woman leading a global effort to support the lives of all women at every stage of life to build stronger and healthier societies. Combating the ideologies that countries and some medical organizations are promoting can be difficult. But the Institute for Women's Health is working hand-in-hand with several countries to create a framework of policies to promote true women's health. I sat down with their president, Valerie Huber, who explained the challenges they face, but also shared her excitement about the headway they're making internationally.
We want to talk about the great work that you've done at the Institute for Women's Health. And you started in this work, and it stemmed out of a very important role that you took on under the Trump administration, and that was the role of the Special Rep for Global Women's Health. Was that a new role? Was it created then, or had it existed for a long time?
I can't tell you what an honor it was to be the first Special Representative for Global Women's Health. It was an all-of-government position, very similar to an ambassador at large. So I had the whole world, but only one focus, and that was promoting women's health. And by the way, to ensure that health was not equated with abortion, because it shouldn't be, and it's not.
And when you first started that work, there was one country in particular that everyone started hearing rumblings about in its desire to be the first ever most pro-life country on the planet. Guatemala.
Well, actually, Guatemala wasn't on the scene until after I left that position and we started the Institute for Women's Health. Unfortunately, the United States left the Geneva Consensus Declaration, that coalition, on day 8 of the current administration's time in the White House. But there was a country that didn't matter to them if the United States was in or out. There was a president that said, it is my faith that makes me defend life from conception. And Guatemala was the first country after the United States left that coalition to join. And that tells you something about the people there and the president who was leading that country.
Now, you just mentioned the Geneva Consensus Declaration. Give us an overview of what that is and why it's so impactful.
When I was special representative for Global Women's Health, I saw that women's health, that topic, had experienced a devolution, really, where women's health was being equated with abortion. And it's just not true.
And it's limiting.
It's very limiting. And it's a narrative that leaves women who are dying every day behind with no assistance for anything else. So our goal really was to put the focus where it should be. And that is, look at those authentically vulnerable women and girls in countries around the world to which the United States provides foreign assistance, other countries provide foreign assistance. And I saw that even though at that time the U.S. administration was very pro-life, many of our traditional allies were not. And so I met with them and proposed that we all work together. We could actually solve some of these unsolved conditions for women around the world with our foreign assistance. But the one limiting factor that had to be removed was the ideology attached to women's health. And I proposed that to the other countries. Not another country would agree to leave abortion out of that equation in order to promote women's health. What did that tell me? It told me that the priority was not really helping the women who needed help. It was promoting ideology above women's health, and actually that women were being used as a vehicle for ideology. So it was based on that I started having conversations with countries that were pro-life, pro-family, that wanted to make genuine improvements to the health of their women and girls, but they were being held back by these conditions that were standing in the way. So based on that, we created together with Brazil, Egypt, Hungary, Indonesia, and Uganda, the Geneva Consensus Declaration. There were four pillars that were really the stalwart piece of this declaration. It created a coalition of nations that said, regardless of where we are, we commit to improve health and thriving for women and girls. Number two, the family is foundational to society and deserves to be protected by the government. Number three, there is no international right to abortion. It's not a human right. It's up to the countries to decide what they're going to do about this. And number four, the sovereign right of countries to defend life, family, and women's health with their own laws and not have external meddling forcing them or pressuring them to change.
Now, you have a new opportunity to apply these four pillars in Africa. What can you tell us about the work you're doing there?
How exciting and how honored we are to work with the First Lady of Uganda to launch a new initiative that's part of a model that we created actually with the government of Guatemala. But in Uganda, we launched the Women's Optimal Health Framework, which is the first life-affirming, family-strengthening framework that ministries of health can use in these countries to affirm every life from conception all the way to death, dividing a woman's life into those life stages. It's looking holistically at helping a woman in receive optimal health, and that's not just physical health. It's emotional health. It's intellectual health. Yes, physical health. It's spiritual health. There's not another framework that takes these elements and empowers a government and literally empowers a woman and a girl at that community level to have opportunities that she has not had in the past.
Now, Africa was recently the source of great controversy in relationship with the United Nations, where
the UN and many other international organizations were blasted for bringing, by a local religious leader, for bringing in abortion and all of the ideological things that you mentioned into their country through aid. Is that really one of the main reasons that the work that you did at the United Nations through this ambassadorship, as you described it, was critical?
So critical. The stories I heard initially I didn't believe were true, where governments, foundations, international organizations were pressuring, threatening to withdraw foreign assistance if the ideology didn't change. And what that really meant was adopting foreign ideologies that were counter to their religious values, their cultural values, sometimes even their constitutions. And it was completely inappropriate, unethical, and not in the best interest of either the country or its people.
Well, Valerie, there are some controversial new figures in the political landscape, like Javier Milei in Argentina, who for many reasons is seen as someone who might be a great partner to the pro-life movement, even though he has other policies that might be controversial. Do you see an opportunity there to partner with him?
Well, we are very excited about the election of President Milei, and he's been very outspoken, whether it be at Davos or in a local school, in his support for life. As you know, it's been many years since Argentina has had a leader that even remotely approximates the leadership of President Milei. Of course, his top priority right now is to try to bring some sense to their economy, but that doesn't mean that he is leaving behind that support for life. We very much look forward to and hope to be able to partner with he and his administration. We also hope that they're the newest Latin American member of the Geneva Consensus Declaration. Latin America, South America, really, in particular, needs a new leader. And we think that Argentina could and should fill that gap.
So then what are the major roadblocks to having more countries adopt this kind of a framework or decide to partner with you?
The roadblocks really are that these countries are under tremendous pressure. There's not a country I've talked to that hasn't talked about and told me personal experiences of how they are either being publicly named and shamed for the values they create, or that there are NGOs that have been stood up as a result of funds and influence from outside sources, that or that members of Congress or the congressional body has been handed legislation and said, if you want a loan or if you want a grant, this needs to be introduced in your Congress or sometimes even passed. Those sorts of things are chilling and not only either remove or at least weaken the sovereignty of countries. And so sometimes, as that pressure increases, it actually steals their resolve, and they grow a spine that they didn't know they had. And what we want to be as the Institute for Women's Health is that encourager that not only encourages them to stand, but gives them the tools and the resources so they can stand.
Thank you so much, Valerie.
Thanks so much for having me.
To learn more about the Institute for Women's Health, visit their website at www.theiwh.org. And that does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Don't forget, you can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on all social media platforms, X, Facebook, Instagram, we're there. And to sign up for our weekly newsletter, go to ewtn.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.